If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Here on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send us a text at 2057, email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. Well, this is a fascinating topic. It's not going to sound it when we start, but it is. We're talking waste and how we manage waste, where the waste comes from, and what the problem is. And to help us with this, we're joined with, now, I'm going to talk slowly because the name is tough for me, Diljinder Uppal. Good morning.
Perfect.
And you're going to let me call you Dil.
Yep, that's absolutely okay.
Diljinder Uppal. So wonderful. And Dil, where are you from originally?
First of all, thank you for having me here, Rodney. Nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure.
And nice to be on. Waste is a pet subject now, and although very non-glamorous, but it is one of the most interesting things.
I know.
When we talk about how big an industry it is in New Zealand, it is quite a big industry with infrastructure.
But first of all, you need to tell me a little bit about you. Where are you from originally? Where were you born?
I was born in Mumbai, in India.
Mumbai.
Yeah.
What we used to call Bombay.
What we used to call Bombay, yes.
Tell me, why did the name get changed? Was that a political, historical significance?
I think it goes back to the olden times. When the British came in, they started calling the place Bombay, and that kind of stuck. It had its original name of Mumbai, which was named after a goddess of the local area, as far as my knowledge is of that place. And I think probably after 60, 70 years of independence, then I think the locality over there, the municipality, then reverted back to the name.
Mm. And what brought you to New Zealand?
I came here to study.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied 3 years of business and advertising in Auckland at AUT. And after that, I stuck in New Zealand, as usually good immigrants do. And I worked in the advertising industry for about 6 to 7 years.
My goodness.
I sold bread and beer to the same person in a day by understanding their different mindsets and needs. Then I got into council, Auckland Council. I had a 9-year stint. I was in communications, behavior change, commercial strategy, waste. And then I made my trip down here to Wellington.
Are you enjoying Wellington?
It's lovely. Yeah, it is lovely. There's this connotation of, oh, it's so windy and all of that, but I think it's a fantastic place. When you look at your family and kids are doing well over here at school and whatnot, so I think it's a fantastic place to be for us.
It's not the big commute like Auckland is with kids, is it? You can get caught in Auckland where it's soccer practice or netball and school and then a party, and you spend your day in the car. Wellington, you can get around.
That's right. That's right. And 10 years ago, Auckland was slightly different. And nowadays, that commute is getting slightly longer with every year. Wellington definitely is better in that regard.
Okay, Dil, on to waste. I have to say, years and years ago, I had an after-dinner speaker who was, I think he called himself an industrial archaeologist, and he had taken to digging up modern landfills to see what was there and what the percentage was. And he gave this after dinner speech, and I've never looked at waste the same, because it is such a fascinating topic, you know. And they'd dig down and they'd find a 1920 New York Times that you could read. And I've had a fascination, and I never take landfills or trucks that are delivering waste for granted ever again. But this is your field. So tell me, in Wellington, how much waste does a person produce on average?
Our per capita waste in Wellington is about 500 kgs a year.
Half a ton.
500 kgs. And we are not good, and neither we are bad. So we are kind of in the middle of the pack.
Middle of the pack for New Zealand or middle of the pack for the world?
I think middle of the pack for both New Zealand and the world.
500 kgs.
Yeah.
And what would, do you know what the volume of that would be, roughly? Like,
I think when we talk about that, I think we've got three landfills over here.
Yeah.
In the region. So how we collect data is a bit different. So we can't really pinpoint, okay, what does 500 kilograms really equate to?
Okay.
Because the waste moves around, and some of the waste can go out of the region as well, depending on who's collecting it.
Okay.
For example, if I tell you that we've got Southern Landfill over here, which is owned by Wellington City Council, we get roughly around, 80 to 100,000 tons on average every year of waste, which, we've got a plan of reducing it down so that one day we don't have to, lean that much on a landfill. And hence, some of my work and the team's work, and also the work that we are doing with the region to reduce waste to landfill, is something that is now taken very seriously, and the region has a plan to do that, and it's also supported by MFE through their waste strategy and whatnot, and some of the details we can get into later on in this.
So at present, Wellingtonians, do they have a plastic bin that they put out?
In the region, there are some places, but in Wellington City, proper Wellington City, the boundaries of Wellington City Council, there are bins, and then there are bags as well.
Okay.
For rubbish.
And do they have a red bin, a blue bin, and a yellow bin, or how does it work for the different waste streams?
Depends on the market share. What Wellington City Council provides, it's a bag service.
Okay.
Then there are private contractors who provide a bin service for rubbish.
Okay.
Wellington City Council provides the recycling service, which is a bin, which is your yellow-lidded bin in Auckland.
Okay.
Ours is a yellow-lidded bin, but the body is black. What is different from Auckland to Wellington with regards to its glass is that you put your glass in your yellow-lidded bin. We don't do that here. We put that in a crate. That used to happen in the old days in Auckland. So, and that crate is color sorted on the curb. And the color sorted at source means that you can attract better value for that glass.
So who does the sorting? The people that pick it up or the householder?
The people that pick it up. The truck comes by. They pick up the crate and then color sort into different compartments of the truck, drive away to the next crate.
And for the household rubbish, you're saying that comes out in a plastic bag, does it? You throw it down at the roadside.
There is a proportion. There is a proportion what is collected in a rubbish bag.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it is actually in a bin. It's roughly 60-40 split. 60 is in a bin, and about 40% of the Wellington market uses bags.
And so if I'm a householder in Wellington, typically I produce my rubbish and I put my bottles out separate. What do I do with my cardboard in Wellington?
Your cardboard goes into the recycling bin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what else do I put in my recycling bin?
You put your plastics.
Yeah.
Which is your, that are marked 1, 2, 5.
Yeah.
You put your cardboard and you put your aluminium cans, the metal stuff that you put in. And obviously the glass goes in the crate.
Okay. Now, let's just deal with the waste gets picked up, say, in the plastic bag or the bin. We'll go through each one from the householders. The waste goes into the bin. It gets picked up. Where does it go typically?
Typically, it ends up at the landfills.
Okay. And does it get compacted or does it just get thrown into the landfill?
There's a big process there with regards to how landfills are operated in New Zealand, and there's quite strict regulations around that, Rodney. It gets compacted. As the waste comes in, it gets covered. You can't leave it uncovered every day. So there is a cover material that has to go on top as well, so that it's, I mean, when you look at the topography of Wellington, the other variables of wind and all of that, you don't want waste flying around. You don't want odor.
Seagulls.
Exactly, seagulls. And usually what happens with these sort of assets, especially waste assets, is that you think that 30 years ago you have created an asset away from civilization, but civilization creeps up to it. Then you get into the community issues side of it. Yeah. So there are very strict regulations around what you do with the waste.
How long has the Southern Landfill been operating?
I would say it's. That's a very good question, Rodney. I would
decades
say
or years.
I think decades.
Decades. Wow.
Yeah.
And then so that goes. The normal waste goes in, gets compacted, and gets dumped in the landfill and gets covered each night. And then over time it gets covered with dirt and it's a landfill filling up. What happens to the recyclables? Where do they go and what happens to them?
The recyclables. So we've got a plant over here, which is a recycling plant. All recyclables of the Wellington region go over there. They are sorted from tins to cardboard to plastics and whatnot. And there is quite a process with regards to doing that sorting and processing.
Sorting by hand, or is there a machine that does it?
A bit of both. There is automatic and also sorting by hand. The automatic sorting probably takes care of about 90% of the sorting.
Oh, my goodness.
But then there will be some stuff that you'll need to keep an eye out for, because it's light. The machines, if you're not familiar, there's a plant in Auckland, probably it'd be worth a visit. And what doesn't get sorted through that, it's picked up by hand. So there are people standing on the side of the belt to actually take it out.
Yeah. And then what happens, say, to the cardboard?
It gets baled up just like the plastic and plastics. With regards to the markets, the end markets for these, there is a value that is recovered by on-selling. The company that we have a contract with, it does the on-selling, it has the markets, it has the relationships. Some of them are onshore over here in New Zealand, and some of them are offshore.
So some of our recyclable gets shifted to overseas.
Overseas, yes.
My goodness.
Yeah.
We don't know what happens to it then.
We don't know what happens to it, but there is some chain of custody there. Because we get assurances from our contractors with regards to where does it end up. And because there is a value.
It doesn't end up in the Pacific Ocean.
No, it doesn't end up in the Pacific Ocean. It doesn't end up in some other landfill in some other country. Because if you remember, there was a time when China came up with this policy of, we are not going to take any more waste. All countries, including New Zealand, had to find ways to look at what our options were. We were not sending a lot of waste to China anyways, but some other countries were. So we had markets.
Does the council get paid, or does it pay to get its recyclables taken away?
Well, we have to pay to get the recyclables taken away.
Okay. So the recycling is... doesn't make money, it costs money overall.
Yes, absolutely. And councils have to wear the burden.
So the revenue stream is very small, or 50% of the costs, or not even close.
Oh no, we don't see much revenue. I think there is some revenue we see, but it's not even close to, you know, probably 20% or something like that to the cost.
Okay. So what happens to the bottles? And
the bottles go to a plant, and it, because it's already color sorted, there is value in those bottles, then they get recycled into you know, other products, glass products, mainly glass. So what we call bottle to bottle recycling.
Does that generate a bit of revenue, or is that a
minimal? Minimal for us. Yes.
So if you weren't recycling the glass and the plastics and the paper and the cardboard, how much of the 500 kgs that Wellingtonian produces each year is recyclable?
That 500 kg is actually not, let me get this right for you, Rodney. It is not counted as waste. The 500 kg waste does not count the recycling.
Recyclable side.
So it is already discounted.
It is actual waste. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is actual. How much do you know the number per person of the recyclables?
No, I don't. No.
Would it be 50% of that?
It would be. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It would be less than that, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say 30, 40%. So if you weren't recycling.
Because, I mean, if I could just provide clarification there, but when we look at waste and proportion to recyclables, we are talking weights over here. And recyclables are based on volume. And when we look at the 500 kg of waste, the similar amount would not weigh as much.
Yeah, okay.
Because we are talking about tins, we are talking about glass, which is not as much with regards to the weekly collection, and also plastic. So the recycling bin as such doesn't really weigh as much.
Yeah. Just looking at it, and then we'll get on to looking at the future and what the plan is. Just looking at it as it stands now, would you save money if you just look, not looking at the environmental consequences, running out of landfills, whatever, would you save money if you just took the recyclables and tossed them in the landfill?
I don't think we would save money because we will still have the cost of collection.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you haven't got the sorting and the paying to take it away.
That is not as much cost. It's collection is the major thing.
Okay.
And also, you know, saving money, the large part is landfill cost. If we are to put light stuff in the landfill, we'll actually be wanting more landfills.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, there's you know, if we have to put all the recyclables like plastics and tins and all of that in the landfill, so we'd need more landfills, basically. And that's a huge cost of developing and designing landfills. And
just to pursue that, presumably, though, cardboard and plastic would come back down a lot.
It would, yes.
Yeah. And is the southern landfill nearing its end of its life? Is it filling up?
It is filling up.
It's filling up.
It is absolutely filling up, but we've just got consent for the next 30 to 35 years. So it was something that we've been working on for over the last 2 to 3 years.
Another 30 years of landfilling there.
Another 30 to 35 years for different stages, and those cells are not built yet, but they'll be built over time when required.
It strikes me as funny when a council tells me it's got consent. So the council applies for a consent for the landfill to the regional council, is it?
That's right, yeah.
It seems funny, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, What would happen if they said no?
it's a fabulous hypothetical, that one, and it would mean that it's got quite a lot of ramifications, not only for Wellington but also the region.
Mm.
And hence, when we talk about zero waste, landfills are an integral part of the waste system.
Mm.
Not that us waste people advocate for councils, but we see the importance of landfills, and even after we can divert and reduce and do what we can with the waste, you know, landfills will still probably have some place with regards to its role in the system.
So, looking out to the future, Wellington has a strategy, which you oversee as project manager, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep.
You can. What is the strategy?
So the strategy, it is called a zero waste strategy. Shall we start with what is zero waste?
Mm-hmm.
It's if we look at it numerically, zero waste is not no waste. We won't get to a point of no waste. Ideologically, we might want to, but we won't. Zero waste is a notion. It's an aspiration, and it also is a cause to get behind for the sake of the environment and for the sake of the reputation of New Zealand. We've always been a green and pure. It's kind of ingrained in our DNA. So that's what zero waste stands for us, and. What sits under zero waste is a few elements. Let's not talk about only using and disposing, but let's build in reuse, recycle, redesign products so that we transition from a take-make-dispose mentality to a circular economy mentality. Can we not rely so much on virgin production of material? Can we reuse some of this material? And that's what happens with glass recycling. There's less reliance on glass new glass, virgin material, but then what our recycling plants do over here is they recycle the old glass that we send to them. So that basically is the whole zero waste connotation and mentality. Under that sit a lot of facts. We've got objectives and we've got targets. We've given ourselves some ambitious targets for the next 5 years. One of them is to take organics, the food waste, out of landfill by 2030. That is in line with Ministry for Environment waste strategy as well. By doing that, we will also satisfy another target, which is reducing biogenic methane emissions from landfills. Mm-hmm. Organics are responsible for mainly 70 to 80% of biogenic methane emissions. At this point, our methane emissions, most of them are captured, and we make electricity out of the emissions from the landfill. And if I can give you a number of how much equivalent electricity we are producing every year, it probably can power about 1,200 houses annually. And this is happening in some other landfills in around New Zealand as well. So I think that is basically the core of our strategy.
Getting the organic waste, is that something, I guess it'll be happening perhaps both ends, but is that going to be predominantly a thing that households do, or is it separated and the council handle the organic waste? How is that going to proceed?
Very similar to how it is in Auckland. I don't know whether it's reached your shores over there or not, but most of Auckland, I think, is covered now with the food waste collections. I'm making an assumption, Rodney, that you are in Auckland.
No, I'm not.
No. Sorry about that.
where I am, we dig a hole and no. not quite. No, I'm in Otago.
Okay. Oh, fantastic.
I have a landfill. I could just about throw a stone and land in it. No, it'd be a good throw. But the landfill is only about quarter of a kilometre from where I am.
Okay.
They do a very good job, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm just interested. So when you say what happens in Auckland, it's not much help to me. So you separate out you pick up the organic waste in a bin. That would be anything that's food related.
Yeah.
Cut the bits you cut off the vegetables, the carrot tops and whatnot.
Yeah.
And presumably, do you turn that into a compost, a big compost bin?
Yep. Yep, you could turn that into a compost. There's different technologies what you can do with that food waste. So you've got the collections bit right with regards to separating at a household level.
Yeah.
You get given a bin. That's something that we would like to put in place, and we've got plans to do that. They get taken to a processing facility, and what happens over there is, you, depending on the technology of the processing facility, there's 4 or 5 end products you could make, from composting to fertilizer to digestate.
Worm farm.
Yep, absolutely.
And is that going to happen, or is it something that you'd like to happen?
It is going to happen.
Okay.
It is going to happen, and this is not because somebody's telling us to make it happen. It's not because there is no regulation now, so we just need to wait for the regulation. You know, Auckland did not wait for the regulation. Mm. They're already doing it because it's the right thing to do. Mm. Taking organics out of landfills is the right thing to do. Mm. When I say it is going to happen, we are in the midst of a procurement process, which is something I can't go in a lot of detail about, but what I can tell you is that we are testing the market with regards to what technologies are out there.
Okay.
And hopefully by 2027-28, we will have a facility operational, and take organics to that facility by separating it at a household level over here in Wellington.
So the householder will then be having ordinary waste for the landfill, cardboard, plastics, etc., recycled, glass bottles, and organic waste.
Yep.
What else is in the works for your zero waste concept?
We've got construction and demolition is another category of materials that we need to concentrate on. We got our strategy approved about this time last year. And since then, we've managed to put up projects like the organics and all of that. Construction and demolition waste is quite important because it touches quite a lot of industries and businesses. And that material has to find its life right at the end at a clean fill or a landfill, and much of that is divertible. Mm. For example, jib, for example, timber. There are some small companies who are diverting some of that stuff. The issue with that is that the best diversion can actually happen at source. Mm. To do that diversion, once it is put together in a skip bin and once it's brought to a facility, let's say a landfill, separating that over there, you need a lot of investment to do that. So we are looking at that investment with regards to what is needed to start separating some of that stuff.
So that's the idea of, say, a builder on a residential site or a commercial site. They're working away, they've got a skip, and everything goes into the skip. the skip gets picked up and it gets dumped in the landfill at some expense to the homeowner or the builder. And what you're saying is we could have a skip for the timber, skip for the jib, skip for bits of metal, whatever.
Yeah.
Separate that at source and pick it up, maybe give the builder a discount on dropping that waste, and you've considerably lowered the landfill requirements and up the recycling.
That's right.
What does, I suppose, old timber can get mushed up and made as fiberboard or something, does it? Like what would you use old timber for?
Old timber, there's two types, treated, untreated.
Yes.
So untreated timber, you can do a few things. Sawdust even.
Yeah.
But treated timber, you can't really do much. It has to, from health and safety reasons, it has to, you know, go into the landfill. So there are certain companies at the moment who probably have consent to burn in their furnaces treated timber, but that is very little for what the proportion of treated timber that is used in New Zealand. And when you look at when, and this is not just construction, it is farming as well. You look at vineyards. The posts, the fence posts and vineyard posts and all of that are, all of that is treated stuff. So there's quite a lot of treated timber that we have.
And if you have a special boiler, you can actually burn that and get the heat and put it into an industrial process or warm a building. But presumably it's some boiler because you've got to stop those poisonous chemicals that have treated that timber from getting out.
Yes, you could. There are couple of companies, I believe, that are doing it, but obviously burning that sort of stuff has its environmental impact. Now, that environmental impact, what is worse, landfilling it or burning that is something that we don't know. Or I don't know.
Well, I know for builders down here, the cost of dumping waste is big time. You know, like a trailer load of waste from a building site is $600, right, for a builder. And they get a lot of trailer loads.
Yeah.
And I've done quite well talking to builders because they'd rather drop it to my place than pay $600 to have it dumped. So I've actually picked up quite a lot of useful timber, just to save money. But the oftentimes, you know, they can be replacing a deck, and the deck isn't that bad. It's still a usable deck, but someone just wants a new deck or a different deck. And all that old timber goes to the tip here, which is, to me, quite disgusting. And then another one that happens down here in Queenstown is, this is extraordinary, we're the end of the line for deliveries. So a whole lot of things turn up here, but not much goes out. So every business ends up with a pile of pallets. Hundreds and hundreds of pallets. And they're busily throwing them out, trying to get people to pick them up outside their businesses because it's so expensive to dump. And I go and get them for the fire and whatnot because they're untreated. But in my poor efforts, I can't burn that much wood.
No. But it's quite terrible. A lot to burn, yes.
It's terrible to see.
You're doing your bit for Otago and the environment, I have to say.
Terrible to see.
You're one of us, Joe Rodney. Wasted. Yeah.
Yeah. I am one of you because, and of course, we're really asking ourselves to live more like our grandparents did. We wouldn't have produced, my mother in her whole life wouldn't have produced a bucket of waste a week. Because they'd have a compost bin. They're very careful what they bought. They were always saving money. And they'd always keep things in the shed because they thought one day that might be useful. And of course, you go to a modern house, they don't have that DIY mentality. They don't have an old shed where they're storing things. And so literally everything's going into the tip. And I notice with young people, they have such a disregard because things are cheap coming out of China that, you know, something's not working and they toss it and get a new one.
Yeah.
Which you're having to deal with.
There is something really important you're touching over here, Rodney. It is the convenience culture. And when we talk about 40, 50 years ago, obviously population density wasn't there. Consumption was not, you know, to the levels that we have. And at that time, you know, there were different landfills that were across different cities. They wouldn't attract so much waste. And in some landfills, probably, you know, you would burn stuff before covering them, old practices. And now it's this whole, the core of the issue is it's the convenience culture. Market responds to that as well because it wants to satisfy more convenience of the generation. You package products in a way that actually reduces your responsibility and puts the onus onto the consumer to do something. And then that onus comes from the consumer to the council. So the council is now, I won't say stuck, but it has to bear the responsibility of doing something with that stuff. So now with regards to council, ministry, some of the other councils in the region, we are actually saying, all right, how can we start not just being or treating landfill as the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff? How can we start reusing more stuff? You know, even in plastics, can we work with businesses to not use plastic but recyclable packaging for, let's say, food grade containers, things like that?
You got to feel a little bit though, don't you? Because say you're a builder and you're battling away with the bloody council to try to get your building up. And then they're coming along and doing their inspections and they're running late and you're trying to get the building done. You're paying your workers. You can't move because it needs to be have a building inspection, all the rest of it. And you're trying to run a business that has to make a dollar. And you're looking upon the council potentially as your enemy because, you know, they have their job and their job is getting in the way of you finishing this house. And then, of course, you're paying for the council and then the council turns up and says, I want you to have four bins. And you're saying, get away from here, please, dear God. I'm that busy putting my harness on and my hard hat and filling out my health and safety forms, checking this, checking that the flashing's right, having some guy take a picture of it and write a report. And now you want me to have four bloody bins. There's a point there where it's tough to have the public on board, even though it sounds wonderful.
Again, comes down to convenience in my mind, and hence why there are companies that are set up to do most of that work for you, especially internationally. But one there is in Auckland that actually takes that waste and then processes it so that the burden doesn't sit on the operator like a builder. To do that. It is something that we would like it over here. And we're just going through the paces of, all right, what is the investment going to be required? Can we get the market on board like a joint venture? And is there any funding available from the ministry for that and all of that? So that's a work in progress. But again, you're touching on where does the burden need to lie? And we cannot put it on the sole trader and then create more angst with the establishment, so to say.
Tell me, I'm not trying to catch you out here. It's not a gotcha moment, but I'm just interested. Is the council itself, I'm not trying to, I'm just interested. Are you, as a organization, working on zero waste as an organization, and how are you getting on if you are? Again,
yes.
It's not a gotcha question.
No, that's okay. Thank you for asking. Yes, we've got our own education campaigns within the councils of, all right, sort out your plastic, sort out your cardboard, don't put this in that bin and whatnot. And that is at a personal level when people are working in the offices. And this is not something that I'm saying just because, you know, you're asking me the question and I'm a councilman and I should be replying in this way or that way. We try and live the values as well, especially, you know, at the council. We have work inbuilt into our procurement practices as well, that if we are going out for contracts, what are the climate imperatives? What are the waste imperatives that we need to be considering when we are asking for new contracts? So what are the levers we can actually use, pull, the incentives we can provide, so that not only council but also community and the market, when they are working with the council, we are working towards one goal. There's a lot of work to be done in that space, but there is good intent and already some action with regards to, especially in the procurement space.
When I go to the park down here and we're eating fish and chips or an ice cream that has a wrapper, and I head over to the bins, I'm confronted with three or four bins, all with a sign on them. And I think, I don't bloody know which bin to put my fish and chip paper.
Yeah.
And I see something called general waste and I toss it in because I can't be. Do you understand that feeling? Is it sheer laziness? But you think, oh, I just want to get rid of this. Four bloody bins. I've got to choose where am I going to put the wrapper. Yeah. And you have a funny feeling too that what next? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Fair enough. It's that's very interesting. And I think when we look at it with regards to behaviors in the house and outside, especially in the parks, our attention span and what we attend to with regards to some of these behaviors for recycling and separating, and we are slightly better in the house than what we do in the parks. I don't know the data, the proportion and all of that. I think if we could just say shorthand, heuristic, this is what probably would be happening. And that points to something with regards to that waste is not just an infrastructure issue. It is a behavior issue as well.
Because I'd love listeners to, I'm talking to Dill from Wellington Council. We're talking about waste and its management. We're talking about an aspiration of zero waste and what that means and how we do it. And it's interesting, Dill, I'd love listeners to text me and email me if I'm right in this memory. You can text me on, I've had a blank on the number. It'll come back to me. Email me inbox@rallycheck.radio. But my memory of growing up in the 60s was our roadsides littered with rubbish, absolutely littered. And people thinking nothing of winding the window down of their car and throwing their rubbish out. And I can remember the government in the 70s having a zero litter or stop littering or don't litter and beautify New Zealand on the roadsides. And it absolutely worked because they're pretty spick and span now. And you can't imagine even throwing an apple core out the window, let alone your fish and chip wrapper, which was a common thing, or a dozen beer. You know, after you've drunk the beer, throw the carton out. So we've come a long way. The streets are a lot tidier. The highways are a lot tidier than we used to. And all of that has been as a result of Well, I guess your old business still advertising and running campaigns to tidy New Zealand up and to make it socially unacceptable.
Yeah. That last thing you mentioned, Rodney, is one of the biggest drivers in that change of behavior.
Social acceptability.
Exactly. Peer, could be peer pressure. Social acceptability and unacceptability and what the norms were and shifting of the norms and probably what that campaign would have done is instill pride of place into Kiwis, and it already knocked on the door or the chamber of the heart that said, hey, we are already this sort of people, and people realize that. And yeah.
Down here one time when I was living in Arrowtown, I saw a couple of ladies wandering down looking inside our bins right down the street. And I thought that looks particularly peculiar because they didn't look like homeless people looking for cigarettes or bottles. And they were putting stickers on telling you off if you didn't recycle right in your recycle bin. Wasn't right. I got to tell you, that really pissed me off. And it's a funny thing, right? Because I guess if you're going to do the recycling bins, you've got to be checking that it's being done properly. And it wasn't like they're going to growl at you. They just put a note. But the sort of someone, the thought of someone going through your rubbish felt like a bit of an invasion of my privacy, if that doesn't sound too weird.
No, it's okay. It can.
What does the council do that in Wellington, and what's the thinking? Because I found that disturbing, actually.
Someone
was rummaging through my rubbish.
Yeah. It can be disturbing. When you look at what ends up in the landfill from that rubbish bin, if you find carcasses in there, if you find concrete blocks in there. So there are really weird things that we've found at the landfill. So it is a matter of education, and again and not be heavy-handed with it. What we do in Wellington over here is, especially in an earlier life when I worked for another council between Auckland and Wellington, I was at Hutt Council. What we did was, instead of just giving out stickers that told people off, we concentrated on people who actually were doing it right. And there was a green sticker that you're a champion. So reinforcing good behaviors is another tactic of creating word of mouth, so that the person who's actually not doing it that well can look at it and can aspire. Could be a long shot, but then complement to that is also that we found undesirable items in there. We would put it in and say, hey, could you please take this out for next time? There are certain ways you could do it. You know, we picked the bin up once, but if we found questionable things again, I think compliance-wise, you know, it definitely is a pain, but there are some things you do need to do to actually get the recycling. Because what happens is, if there is certain amount of contamination in the truck of recycling, that whole truck has to go to landfill. The operator will not take it.
Because it's too costly to sort, or because
absolutely
the contamination goes through the whole? No, it's because it's too costly.
It is. It.
So one persistent household putting non-recyclable stuff in the recyclable bin because their other bin is full, they take a truck that would have been recycled and throw it into the hole. So everyone else's efforts are wasted.
In everyone's efforts. Well, I won't say it is as low as one household, but yes, behavior of others affect the outcome for others.
But also, if times got tough, and they are getting tougher, and I see some councillors are talking about this, we could save a lot of money if we just filled up the landfill quicker and then ultimately dug another hole.
Look, I haven't done the math of what would be actually better.
Okay.
Digging another hole, it's very costly.
I know it's costly because of the Jolly Council.
Yeah.
Getting the consent is the issue.
Getting the consent in the issue. And we are actually lucky that, and me being a councilman saying it, we are lucky that we own the landfill. So we have some control in the waste system. And we are not at the mercy of the waste system and it being operated by the free market. There is a balance that needs to be, but it offers resilience in the system.
I visited the landfill in Canterbury. Is it called the Capel Valley? Capel Valley. I was shocked by how well that was run. And not a chewing gum packet gets blown off those trucks. They drive up and you drive into the landfill and it was absolutely scrupulous. Oh my goodness. And it was a very, very impressive operation. I think that's 50-50 council and a private operator, I think.
Yeah.
But they have very, very heavy, deductions, I'm trying to think, penalties that have to be paid if a piece of paper blows off a truck or if a piece of paper blows off the landfill. And it was astonishing to me how well run a modern landfill built for the purpose using modern techniques and technology can do so. And I imagine they've got space there for a long, long time in the future. So, well, Dill, thank you for joining us this morning. You'll have to say your name because I've got so into the conversation I've forgotten it.
Dill Upal.
It's so wonderful to have you. Good luck with your work with the council. You do feel as though we need to do better, and you do feel as though we need to do better as households rather than just buying rubbish and throwing it out as rubbish. Buying rubbish for our kids for Christmas. the rubbish you end up with on Christmas Day is truly astonishing. Everything's bloody wrapped up, cardboard boxes, batteries. Oh, my goodness. And my father would be turning in his grave. He'd be running around scrounging it and flattening the paper out, saying this might come in handy one day. Yeah. So you do feel as though we have an issue. Thank you for joining with us this morning to explain about waste. I hope it gives everyone food for thought and thinking about when you put your bin out, sorting it properly and thinking about where it goes. All the very best.
Thanks a lot, Rodney. Thank you. I mean, as people of New Zealand, we've got better proclivity to do the right thing than otherwise.
Yes.
So I've got a lot of hope.
Indeed. There we go. Yeah. We've all got a lot of hope. You're on Rally Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and the dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.